Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
So again, I'd like to welcome you to today's TechNet webcast. This is Internet Security and Acceleration Server 2006, the technical overview. It's my pleasure to introduce today's presenter. We have Keith Combs here with us, and Keith is part of the TechNet Microsoft Across America team. So Keith, take it away.
Thanks a lot, Janet. Welcome, everybody, to another TechNet webcast. Today, we're going to look at Internet Security and Acceleration Server 2006. That is a long name, so we'll just probably shorten it to ISA for the remainder of today. This is a tech overview, and this is 90 minutes. This is going to be a pretty long webcast. I've got a ton of demos to do. In fact, I actually updated a couple of the VMs with the latest and greatest management pack for MOM. So we're going to look at a lot of good stuff today. We'll talk about what's new with ISA Server 2006 as we kind of go through the course of this webcast. So from a coverage standpoint, we're going to look at, you know, some of the security features. That's obviously a big focus for all of our products, and ISA Server being the security sort of product that it is, we're going to look at, you know, what's new in the security world. So we'll look at, you know, new mechanisms for authentication, new ways to block worms and denial of service attacks. We'll look at a bunch of cool stuff related to that we've improved the product with. We'll also look at, of course, the administrative interfaces and tool set. So we'll look, you know, in the ISA VM, we'll look at that console, then we'll also look at what it looks like from a MOM management console. So we'll look at MOM 2005 and look at the management packs associated with ISA 2006. So we're going to look at tools from a lot of different angles. We're going to look at what branch office benefits there are. So we'll look at some of the things that you can do to connect, you know, branch office locations to maybe a main headquarters style network. So we'll look at some of those kind of tools and some of those benefits. And then we're going to look at, like I mentioned before, we're going to look at the monitoring both inside ISA 2006 as well as MOM, and look at all those kind of angles. From the standpoint of experience, you know, experience with most of our products will be good. You know, understanding Windows, networking, firewall applications in general. This is a level 200, so it's not real basic. It's not a 300 or 400 level, so we're not going to go super duper deep, but we're going to look at, you know, quite a few of the technical underpinnings for the product this morning. Now, so what are we going to do first? Let's first start off looking at just ISA Server in general. You know, what were some of the design goals for the product? So what do we do in 2006? You know, what's new? We'll do a little level set on it. We'll figure out exactly what it is. We'll look at some of the additions, and then we'll talk about, you know, some of the new features there. So ISA Server 2006 helps protect resources. And in the case of the latest generation of the product, even with 2004 and now with 2006, consider resources to be network types, you know, networks that are either internal or external. So maybe it's your ISP connection, or it could be your intranet. You can certainly use multiple ISA servers inside your organization to carve up the network and apply policies to the various network segments that you might have. So it's a great product for doing that. As you can see here on the second bullet, it lets you connect directly to the internet. So that's a typical sort of use for it, and that has been a sort of historical use for it from products like small business servers. So you would see it being, you know, the main firewall into your little corporate network. Well, also the same can be true for big enterprise networks. So if you want to install the enterprise edition and have this big caching array and multiple servers and have a nicely highly available array of firewalls and servers, then you can do that. So it helps you do that and screen the traffic in and out of your infrastructure and the internet, so protect all that data. Now you'll notice here that it talks about screening network traffic, and we'll see what we mean by that. So, you know, how do we look at the traffic coming in and out, and how do we take action on things that we might spot? So what can it detect, and what kind of actions can we take there? So we'll talk about all that. So there's a couple different additions. I kind of stole a little bit of the thunder already from one of these, and that is the Enterprise Edition. The Enterprise Edition allows us to build up a fault-tolerant set of firewalls for a large organization. So if you're a big organization and you need the ability to manage multiple firewalls, then the Enterprise Edition is going to be something you'll definitely want to look at. If, on the other hand, you're a little smaller organization, then maybe the Standard Edition is one of the products that you might want to take a look at. It's kind of designed for orgs that or small companies that only need one firewall. They don't really need maybe the big caching features and fault-tolerant features, and so they just need an enterprise sort of class firewall, but they don't need all the enterprise sort of features from the standpoint of scalability and fault-tolerant. So we have a couple additions for that reason, and most of you are probably, well, I shouldn't say most of you, but a lot of you, I'm sure, are probably running the Standard Edition if you're using the Small Business Server product. That's been a well-used product with SBS 2003 and before, so you're probably familiar with that. So we'll look at some of the changes, and you'll probably spot some of the UI changes as we're kind of going through the course of this session today. So let's talk about, you know, one of the big changes that came along with ISA Server 2006, and one of those changes relates to appliances and the ability to now build an appliance application or a box that includes the ISA Server 2006 product and an addition of Windows Server 2003. So in this case, we're showing you this sort of appliance box and a hardened version of Windows Server 2003. And so in this particular case, what we mean by hardened is that it's only running the services and features that are necessary, you know, to execute the ISA Server 2006 product and provide that network connectivity. And so it's optimized to run on this hardware. So we've got a number of OEM partners that have built machines that allow you to do that. So we've got, you know, a great set of hardware vendors that have these components. And if you were paying attention to this slide, you'll notice it flashed a few bullets up. And what those bullets were things like additions that may have been added by the hardware vendors, like protocol accelerators or an antivirus gateway, or something cool like a content filtering software, or something like that. So there's a number of different components you might find that the OEM has added to that to further value add the appliance that you can go buy. So those are great examples of the extensibility in the way that ISA Server allows add-ons, you know, for things like antivirus and anti-spam and network load balancing and those types of you know, requirements that you might have. So it's a great, great way to set that up. Now, again, this was first introduced with ISA Server 2004. However, one difference between the two is that with ISA Server 2004, you could only run the Standard Edition. So as you'll see here in just a minute, we have some additional capabilities. Now we can run Enterprise Edition, and with that, then we can scale up the appliance set that you might decide to use for the front end to the Internet. So you can scale it up for, you know, connections going outbound. You may decide to scale it up for, you know, a massive amount of traffic that's coming into your domain. So, for instance, you might imagine if you consider Microsoft, think of all the email that's going in and out of our infrastructure, all the stuff that comes from the Internet and comes into our corporate environment, and vice versa. Think about all the data that we send as well. So, you know, one server is not going to do it, and we'd want to scale that up and make sure that we have, you know, a nice way to manage all those servers, and the Enterprise Edition does that for us. Now, there's a number of different ways to get this deployed. So from the standpoint of deployment, there's some new capabilities, the ability to use USB flash drives and, you know, branch office deployment wizards. So we've added some cool capabilities from the standpoint of deployment to make that very flexible in your you know, deployment and design and planning stages. So, for instance, you know, a lot of you probably have, you know, 1 and 2 gig USB sticks at this point, or other types of memory card devices. And, you know, as those get bigger, you know, they're DVD and bigger size. So I even start to see now, you know, 4 gig sticks are becoming very prevalent, which is, you know, a standard single-sided sort of DVD capacity. So that gives you a lot of flexibility on, you know, the amount of bits you can put on the device and deploy that with, you know, any customization like rules that maybe you want to import, or, you know, a template, if you will, for a number of appliances. So again, great new support from that standpoint. A lot of different benefits around the deployment. And you can see a lot of the key benefits here associated with these appliances. You know, think of them in terms of, you know, a nice sort of standard that's already been loaded and tested. You know, this great hardened config. You've got great warranty and support from an OEM that knows exactly what they're selling and servicing. So it's an excellent sort of solution to think about, as opposed to, you know, building your own box. So when you're looking at ISA Server 2006 and considering, you know, the buy versus build decision that you'll probably go through, consider those, you know, appliances that are available on the market out there. So let's go to our next slide. Let's talk a little bit more about what's new. And I think this next slide is the problem slide. Yep. So it goes through a couple builds that you couldn't see, but that's okay. They were like dark text on top of a blue background. So let me just talk about a couple of the slides that, you know, kind of popped by. From the standpoint of what's new, there's some new security features that are in there. And what we wanted to do was to give you really good tight integration with the applications and infrastructure you're probably already running. So when you think about Active Directory and IIS and, you know, other services like DHCP, we wanted to make sure that we had great integration across all of that. So what we did was is we gave you, you know, better way to, you know, first of all, give you, you know, ways to authenticate using existing infrastructure. So a lot of you are probably using things like certificates and, you know, NT Landman style security and those types of mechanisms to authenticate connections into your network. Well, we wanted to expand that, and you'll see some examples of that when we start looking at some of the demos here in just a minute. And then we also wanted to make sure to think about, you know, how can we start to provide, you know, the holy grail of single sign-on? So what does that mean? What things can we leverage? What types of protocols might we use for single sign-on? And, you know, what would that look like both from the standpoint of the administrator and the configuration side of the equation versus the user as they come in to maybe use something like, you know, a published web application or a published SharePoint site or one of those types of items that are, you know, in common usage. So we have improved, you know, the way that occurs. So we've made faster secure access. You probably saw link translation when we're doing demos and walkthroughs of ISA Server 2004, and that's continued to be improved in this version of the product. You'll notice here we're talking about compression and caching. There's a lot more flexibility now on how you set that up. So how can we design some sort of quality of service, if you will, around our application? So how can we build some rules and have the ISA server act on our behalf to guarantee bandwidth or to guarantee specific capabilities for applications we might decide to run? So we'll see how to do that. We'll set up some performance profiles, and then we'll drive that through URL linking and some things like that. So we'll see some real good examples of that here in just a minute, you know, taking better advantage of that bandwidth utilization. So let's get to our first set of demos. Let's start exploring the user interface. We'll look at the perimeter network and, you know, how do we use templates and some of the wizards that are in ISA Server 2006. I got 2007 burned in the brain already with the launch events coming. So let's do a sharing. I'm going to get out and share my desktop. You should see a nice green background. And first thing I'm going to do is bring up a virtual PC console, and I'm on the wrong VM. So let me just flip over to ISA Server 2006. Okay, so if you'll maximize your desktop, I think it's like the F5 key, you should see my desktop. I'm running the hosting environment at 1280 by 1024. And then the VMs are running 1024 by 768. So it should look pretty good to you, nice and square. And what we're going to do first is, as you can see here, I have got the ISA 2006 console up and running. And if we start at the top here, the first node at the top, which just says Microsoft Security and Acceleration Server, you'll notice we get some good sort of starting points here. We can see the Getting Started guide. We can see information on how do we set up security for ISA Server 2006. You'll notice that it's got some great links for, you know, where to go on the Microsoft website. And then you also see some partner links there. So we've got a lot of great information there. As we drill down even further, if we highlight our server here, you'll notice that we start to take a step-by-step approach to how to configure, you know, this box. So what do we need to do to start with? You know, what kind of things do we need to think about? And you'll notice that, you know, it's kind of got this step-by-step approach on, you know, how to configure your network, how to configure policy rules, you know, how to define whether or not we're going to cache web content, set up things like VPN access, and, you know, then later on how to do monitoring and reporting, right? So all those kind of things, that's a, you know, very sort of methodical approach to setting up the product. Now, let me show you, first of all, let's click this firewall policy node here on the sort of top left. And you'll notice that we have one rule by default. So when you install the product, you can see our default rule here. And as we kind of drill into the properties for our default rule, let's take a look at the properties for that and see what it says. So it's enabled by default, which also means you'll notice that this is grayed out, and that means I can't turn that off. So this rule is going to be there at all times. And so what we're going to do is we're going to build rules ahead of it. So it's going to cascade down through our rules, and those rules are going to be interpreted and evaluated. And if we don't hit a condition for one of those rules, so we'll eventually fall through and hit this rule, right? So you'll notice that this rule, I just clicked on the action, is by default a deny rule. So if we look at, you know, from where and to where, the sources, you'll notice that from all networks and to all networks, by default, we're blocking all protocols and all traffic and denying anything from moving around. So if you install the product and you can't get anywhere, this is the reason why. So we need to go define some network policies that allow us to do that. So I always like to show people the first rule that's in there. Now, you'll notice as we're looking at this console, it's broken up in sort of the typical style fashion that you see a lot of our products now, right? So you've got a navigational tree on the left. You've got a summary or sort of details pane here in the middle. Then on the right-hand side, we have this sort of context-sensitive set of tasks or tools or help associated with something that we might be trying to do. Now, you'll notice I can dismiss this right-hand side, so I can kind of expand and collapse that so that we can see these rules better. And in fact, let me go ahead and fix that so you can see this rule a little bit better. So now you can see we have a little bit more screen real estate, and if we want to take a look at those tasks again, we can bring that back out. So it's not really auto-hide. I would like to see it, you know, be auto-hide, but you can expand and collapse it quite easily. Now you'll notice we've got a toolbox tab. Within that toolbox, we can define a variety of different components. So we could define maybe a custom protocol. Let's say we wanted to set up a Half-Life 2 server or Counter-Strike server. We could define the protocols associated with that. Or if we want to do something more business-oriented, maybe we've got a line-of-business application that runs across some very specific UDP or TCP ports. So we could go in and define that custom protocol and then build rules around that. So we could use those protocol definitions as part of the criteria that we might define inside our firewall. In fact, we'll do that here in a few minutes. We'll define some computers. We'll define a web listener. We'll define a variety of different components in a little while. Now, if all this seems like it's sounding a little different to you, so this whole language and metaphor is a little different, you can always go to help. So you can go look at the help and see, okay, well, how do I publish an Exchange server? Or how do I publish a SharePoint server? Lots of good help. You know, read the manual. The manuals are good, and we've got good help associated with that. You'll notice here on the task pane, we've got some great common tasks here at the top. So, you know, a very common task is to give access to people to your Exchange server. Maybe they're going to connect from an Outlook client, or maybe they've got a smartphone. And, you know, how do we publish those types of resources from Exchange or web servers or whatever the case may be and give you those type of capabilities? Well, we've got some real easy-to-use wizards that we're going to do that with. Let's take a look at, let's go back over here to the Protocols tab again, and let's take a look at, I'm just going to expand the web protocols here, and you'll notice that we've got some well-defined protocols there, right? So some very common ones, HTTP, the old tongue twister for people that are doing webcasts. And then you'll also notice that we've got, you know, FTP, et cetera. If we look at other protocols that are defined in here, we can see protocols like Kerberos under the authentication container. If we went into the server area, you can see we've got all kinds of server types in here, DNS servers, POP3, you know, SMTP servers, all the well-known servers, we've got those protocols already defined. So, in fact, if we wanted to right-mouse click on SMTP server, for instance, and go to properties for that, you'll notice that we can see how we're defining the protocols for that. You know, it's a well-known port, port 25, TCP inbound, and we're also using the SMTP filter. So these protocols, this shouldn't be real magic to you at the moment, but I just wanted to let you know that if you needed to create a protocol, all you really have to do is go in and click New and then start setting up that protocol with the wizard, right? So it's real easy to do that. And we're going to actually create a couple new components here in a minute. So let's take a look. Let me cancel out of this. And the next thing I wanted to kind of do is just kind of show you some of the network objects that are there. So let me click down here at the bottom of this little task pane, and you see where it says network objects. And I'll bring that up. We can expand some of these containers. So like if you look under the network container itself, you'll notice we've got some well-defined networks. Now when we install ISA Server, it's going to first of all look at the network cards that are installed in your box, and it's going to just make some decisions on what it determines is an external network, what it determines are internal networks, and it'll ask you some of those questions at installation time. So it'll verify what it detects. It'll essentially verify, okay, is this network card and subnet range the internal network, or is this network card and IP subnet either the internet or maybe a perimeter network. So you can see here that we've got some of that defined. So if we were actually to go look at the definition for this internal network, look at the properties for that, you can see that we've got a range of IP addresses defined for our internal network. So if we wanted to change that, we could do that a couple different ways. Maybe we could click the add adapter here, click on that, and then pick one of the adapters that's installed in our machine. Now you'll notice in this case, we've got three adapters defined in this virtual machine, and we've already named those, you know, really easy to notice names, right? So we've got internal, perimeter, and external. And if we look at the different properties for those NICs, then we can see that they're bound to very specific network, you know, ranges, right? So that's kind of how that's done. We'll actually do some configuration tasks here in a few minutes. Let's go take a look at, let me just cancel out of this. Let's go to the configuration container. Now, the configuration container, just like it sounds, it lets us drill into some of the properties that are kind of associated globally with ISA Server 2006. So things like the networks like we were just looking at. Now, in this particular case, you get this really cool view of the template that we're using. Now, you'll notice that we're using, you know, a standard default sort of form here. We've got a ISA Server that's, you know, that's being the bridge, if you will, between the internal network and the external network. So we're you know, the firewall that's in between those two, a dual NIC configuration, and we've got a couple, and so that's the template we're using. Now, if we wanted to change that, we could do that quite easily. So you'll notice here on the right-hand side, we've got some different templates. So let's click the three-leg perimeter template. So I click Next, and it'll walk us through the changing of that. Now, you'll notice before we get very far, what's one of the first things that it starts asking us here? It starts asking us, hey, do you want to export the current design? So let's say, for instance, you want to mess around with your network. It would be, you know, a very good practice to export your current config, save it off in the XML files that it's going to write, so that if you mess something up, then you can go back and re-import those files and therefore that definition and undo anything that you might have you know, messed up. Now, obviously, most of you are probably not doing changes to your production boxes without testing them inside either a test environment, test lab, or inside a VM. So I would highly recommend doing those types of test changes before you implement it in production. So let's click Next. You'll notice here that it's given us on this next screen, it's saying, okay, who is the internal network? And so we can see that range of IP addresses, and I know that that's good in this particular demo's case. So we're just going to click Next. Now it's asking us, who is the perimeter? You'll notice that this is not filled out. Now, we could do this a couple ways, right? So we could define the range. So we could click Add Range and define that subnet. Or we could cheat and do it the easy way, which is my preference, and we'll click Add Adapter. And then we can click on Perimeter there. You'll notice that it's kind of filling out that range of information here for us. I'm highlighting that for you. We can click OK, and then it comes back and populates that range in the little wizard for it. So we'll click Next. Then it comes up with a set of properties that we can define for the network. So we can decide, okay, do we want to block all traffic, or what kind of traffic do we want to allow. In this particular case, we're going to just go down here. Let's scroll down and allow limited access and allow access to the services on the perimeter network. So you can see that one that's highlighted here. And we get a kind of a description here of saying, okay, we're going to allow the web protocols, we're going to allow FTP, and we're only going to allow access to the network, such, you know, network services like DNS on the perimeter network. So we're going to give them a limited set of capabilities by doing that. So I'm going to click Next, and then I'm going to click Finish. You'll notice that it updates the pretty picture for us, but you'll also notice something that's kind of interesting here. Notice up here at the top above that, it's got this Apply button, right? So we could go ahead and discard that. So let's say we made a mistake. We can actually discard those changes right now and kind of undo the effect of those changes, or we could go ahead and apply. So I'm going to apply that change and save those changes. And this is essentially putting this in force, right? So let's go click OK. Now let's go back over to our firewall policy, that little container we looked at a minute ago, and you're going to see something new here. So when we click on the firewall policy, now we have more than just a deny rule. So it created some of those rules allowing some of the capabilities that we saw in the description for the template. So you'll notice up here on the web access rule, we're allowing FTP, HTTP, the SSL protocol from the internal networks, from the VPN clients, so that's another style network, to external and to perimeter, right? And then you'll also notice we've also got allowing the DNS protocol from the internal network and any VPN clients to the perimeter network. So we can see what that template did. It automated the construction of some of the rules for us and did some of that care and feeding for us in defining those rules for us. Now, let me show you a couple other things here so you'll just kind of get an idea of, you know, some of the other capabilities that are built into this product. So let's go over to, let's take a look at the internal network here. So I'm going to go look at internal network. Where's networks? There we go. Click on that. Let's take a look at the properties for the internal network. You'll notice when we look at the properties to that network, we have some other settings that we can make. So if we wanted to look at, for instance, the firewall client information, we can control, you know, how clients respond to our ISA server. So if you want to set up automation that allows those ISA server firewall clients to detect an ISA server on the net, pull in those settings and then understand, you know, how to use it as a proxy for outbound requests to internet websites, then we can automate a lot of that right here. So some of those properties and settings are where you'll define that. And then when you deploy, you know, those smart firewall clients into your desktop environment, then you won't have to go through and have users, you know, manually do that. They'll automatically go ahead and update themselves and just, you know, magically start working. Let me show you some other things. Let me cancel out of this. Let's go to the configuration area. And I wanted to show you the other sort of additions, the add-ons that are here. You'll notice that we've got a number of different types of application filters that are in here, so we can control behavior for things like the FTP protocol, or, you know, how do we handle SMTP email traffic, and so what do we do with attachments and those kind of things. So we've got some add-ins that are installed here. You'll notice that we've also got some web filters, and we're going to look at this top filter here in a little while. So when we start talking about diff serve tagging of web traffic and how do we control, you know, priority of web traffic, we're going to see how to go configure that when we kind of get to that later on today. So let's do this. The next thing I wanted to kind of show you were some properties associated with the web server that we're running on against right now. So let's take a look at the ISA server here. And you'll notice here on the right-hand side in the server task area, we've got this task that says assign administrative role. So let's see what that looks like. You'll notice right now we've got some roles already defined. So we've got the domain group, the domain administrator, as well as the local boxes administrators group, the local administrators group, all set up as an ISA full administrator, right? Now, if we wanted to add additional roles, we can do that. So I could click the Add button, and let me show you the kind of roles we've got here. So we've got some new auditing roles, allowing you to essentially set somebody up and kind of audit what's going on with this machine, making sure that it's set within your corporate standards, making sure that you know, somebody hasn't done something to like turn off deep inspection of maybe the web streams or SMTP protocol traffic. So again, this gives you the ability to either monitor or audit what's taking place on your machine and look at those reports, look at, you know, what, how it's set up and run. So this will give you, I think, some great sort of configuration options to think about when you're looking at, you know, how do I set this up and run this and keep it running in sort of a standard way. So let's do this next. Let me cancel out of this. Next thing I wanted to do is kind of go through, let's take a look at, you know, how do we make some changes? How do we create an access rule? What kind of things might we want to create? One of the first things that you'll probably want to do if you have an Exchange server is to set up a rule associated with that, right? So let's see how we create a rule to do that. So I'm going to create an Exchange server rule, and we're going to call this, you know, allow Exchange server or something like that. So you'll notice here on the task down here at the bottom, we've got this link that says create access rule. Now you'll notice we've got some other Exchange related wizards just above it, but we're going to do the access rule to start with. So let's click that, bring that up so you can see this a little bit better, put it in the middle of your screen. Let's call this allow Exchange, what do you want to call, server internal access. So when you build rules, it's nice to be able to build, you know, sort of kind of a descriptive name for those rules so it's kind of apparent at first glance what it's doing. So that's always a cool thing to do. With it, in this particular case, we're going to do an allow rule, so we're going to select that radio button that's up there. In this particular case, we're going to just go ahead and let all outbound traffic be the default protocol. So we're going to go ahead and select that from this drop-down list. So all outbound traffic. We could be surgical and specific about the particular protocols if we wanted to, but it's not necessary for this particular demo. So let's go ahead and do that. Now, we need to specify source and destination. So we're gonna pick those from a pick list here. So I'm going to add the rule source. In this particular case, we're going to specify a very specific computer. Okay. So as you can see here, we don't have anything listed under the computer's node. So I'm going to create a new computer, and I can do that by clicking the drop-down list here. You'll notice that I've got computer as one of the little objects that we can create here. So I'm going to say yep to that, and then we're going to fill out, you know, who the computer is. So in this case, it's SEA and EXSP-01, and then we're going to specify the IP address for this particular machine. So in this case, it's 192.168.32.2. And we could give it an additional description if we wanted to. Say OK. Now you'll notice that it's in this pick list, right? So you see it right there in the computer container. So now we can do an add, and then if we don't need to add any additional machines, we can go ahead and dismiss this dialog box by clicking close. So we'll do that now. So now we have a rule source. The next thing we want to do is specify the destination. So we'll click next. And you'll see that we don't have a default, so we're going to click Add, and we're going to specify a network here. So in this particular case, we want to expose this Exchange server to the internal network. So we're going to click on the internal network name, click Add, and click Close. Then now you can see that that's populated here in the destination. Okay, so next thing, we could specify a subset of the users. In this case, we're just going to leave the default there for all users. Click Next, click Finish. You'll notice once again, even though the rule is here and we've got this rule highlighted, we need to go ahead and apply that to essentially make that rule be in effect. So I'm going to go ahead and apply that change right now. Click OK. We'll see it update itself. And then now let's go look at some of the access rule destinations here. So I'm going to go down here and click on the network node, that container. And we're going to look at the properties for the perimeter configuration here. Okay. Now, one of the things we want to change on our perimeter configuration at this point, and we probably should have just done it a few minutes ago when we were kind of messing around with it, is we want to change the sort of routing relationship with it. When you set up some of these routing relationships by default, it's going to use network address translation. In this particular case, we might decide that we want to just do routing on it. So let me go ahead and let's see, where the heck is it actually? here we are. There we are. So under the network rules, under the network relationship, like I was mentioning, you'll notice that it's got, you know, NAT or NATE defined as the default relationship. Now, in this case, we're going to go ahead and just change this to route. So I'm just showing you, when you set up networks or when you define some of the relationships that you might have between networks that ISA Server 2006 is controlling, think about, you know, visibility. Are you going to expose and route all traffic, or are you going to do address translation on that traffic? So let's click Apply and save those changes. Then let's go over to, let's do this. Let's go over to our Exchange Server VM. Where is it now? Here we are. Let's bring up a command console, and let's just verify that we have the ability to ping a particular destination, right? So we want to make sure that we have the ability to maybe talk to something like the domain controller. So, you know, that would be an important thing for Exchange, right? So let's go ahead and ping SEA-DC-01. Okay, so what I'm showing you here is that because of these rules, now if we had looked at, you know, would this command work prior to definition of that perimeter network and prior to making those changes via the template change that we made, you would have seen that deny rule was blocking traffic. So the Exchange Server couldn't talk to the DC, you know, it was blocking that particular network traffic. But now that we've kind of opened up our perimeter configuration and opened up the flow, if you will, of the network traffic back and forth across ISA server, you can see that ping is succeeding. So that kind of gives you a real sort of brief overview of the console, what it looks like on ISA Server 2006. As you'll recall, it's very, very similar to 2004. So a lot of the capabilities that you had in 2004 are there. We'll look at some of the differences when we start looking at cache rules and defining that. And we'll also look at some of the other new capabilities down here in the general area. So we'll look at, you know, how do we do HTTP compression and what are the differences there? How do we specify flood mitigation? So we'll look at some of the security settings when we come back to this in just a minute. But at the moment, let me go ahead and get out of desktop sharing. Let's kind of recap just a couple things that we did there. So we took a look at the, you know, user interface. And in this particular case, the user interface that we were looking at, it was from the administrator point of view, what tools do we have at our disposal? Now, we haven't looked at, you know, the monitoring aspects yet. We haven't looked at the reporting aspects, but we'll get to that, excuse me, in a few more minutes when we kind of drill down into that. So let's take a look at, you know, how do we do publication of applications, which is really kind of the next thing. So how do we design a line of business application or take a SharePoint site or something like that and get that published out to the web? So we're going to start looking at, you know, what is the process for that? So here are some of the concerns you're probably familiar with, right? You know, how do we prevent, you know, attacks from the outside, or how do we increase our security? Well, we've added better capabilities around SSL bridging. We've also added better capabilities around different types of authentication methods that you can use. So you'll see here that we've added support for things like LDAP authentication. We've added better multi-factor authentication. So, you know, devices like SecureCard or RSA Secure ID or you know, other mechanisms like that have kind of come on the scene in the past few years, we've built, you know, better capabilities into the authentication methods that are there. And then you'll notice that we can start to delegate some of those capabilities now that we have more flexible authentication methods. So what you see here is more flexibility, and with that, we can start taking advantage of that with application publishing. So if we want to look at, you know, a holistic approach to both firewall as well as VPN management, now we have a product that does that. We also have a product that you can see here does deep content inspection. So what we mean by deep is, although you may have a VPN session between a client and a back-end server, or between a branch office location and a home office location, we can look inside those VPN connections, inspect the traffic. So let's say it's a email traffic with attachments or something along those lines. We can look at that traffic and spot problems with virus-laden attachments or something along those lines. So we can do that kind of content inspection and then react to that. So we can pull those out and strip attachments based on some of the policies or rules we might decide to put in place. Now, you'll notice that we're talking about VPN quarantine here, right? You've seen us do demos for that. In fact, every time Brian Von Oxenson, who's helping me out with questions right now, VPNs into Microsoft's corporate network, they inspect our machine, they quarantine that connection, they look to see, do we have antivirus software installed? Do we have the latest versions of those virus signatures? Have we implemented the firewall, and do we have the latest patches and fixes for our clients? So as you'll notice, last week we shot out a bunch of high priority fixes from the security servers, from the Windows Update servers, and sure enough, as soon as we started VPN in, they started checking to see have you pulled those patches and fixes down and implemented those high priority fixes to your clients. So what they'll do is, if you don't do that, they'll block our connection into Microsoft's corporate network. So now the cool thing is we've got some additional capabilities that are coming. So you've probably heard about, network quarantine, also known as NAP. So network access protocols and the abilities to define policies around that access for any connection that's in your network. So when you start looking at Windows Vista, you'll notice that we have a NAP client built into Windows Vista. And the server side of that is being constructed and developed on the Longhorn server platform, which will ship later on. So start looking at, if you want to get to that, really, really hardcore policy management on all connections on your network, we have some great stuff that's coming. So this is going to allow you to do, good things like strong logging and reporting. We'll be able to look at all the kind of capabilities associated with that. You'll notice that we've got some new web publishing load balancing capabilities built into the product now. So we'll look at, how do we kind of set that up? What does that mean for us? How do we take advantage of those capabilities? And, what kind of advantage, what benefit do we get from that? So we're going to look at that as we kind of go through today, and we'll look at some of those capabilities. You'll also notice that we've automated, as usual, a lot of the tools for some of the products that you're, buying and deploying. So Exchange Server, Microsoft Office, SharePoint, there's a lot of good tools associated with that. So we'll see that in just a minute. We're actually going to set up certificate configuration for Exchange here in just a moment. So we're going to go look at a certificate. We're going to define that for some of the virtual directories that we have on an ISA server machine, and we'll see how to integrate that with ISA server here in just a minute. So there's a lot of real simple ways to do that. So we'll look at the wizards that are associated with that here in just a minute. Now, from a user access standpoint, we might want to you'll notice I mentioned a little while ago that we have this thing called single sign-on, and that some of those capabilities are new. Now, automatic link transition isn't necessarily new, but it's been improved in such a way, so they wanted to go ahead and just kind of discuss it from the standpoint of being it's new. Now, in previous versions of ISA server, remote access servers could not necessarily access internal sites, linked an email, and they had to authenticate, and it was kind of a mess, right? You'll notice now that we can give them a much, much better experience and give them access to document libraries. So one of the things that Brian Von Axelson and I have been kind of testing is we've exposed some of these capabilities into Microsoft's corporate networks. And now I don't have to actually go VPN into Microsoft's corporate network before I have to go use an internal expense reporting tool. So that is a real simplified way for us to now do one aspect of our job. So Brian and I both travel a lot, and we have to do expense reports. So normally we'd have to go VPN in, establish that connection, work through our expense reports and all those sort of transactions, submit that expense report, and it's just a bit of a hassle, right? With the new single sign-on sort of capabilities, we don't have to establish a VPN. We can just go right on in using our smart cards and the multi-factor authentication capabilities. It just recognizes us, it recognizes our cert, and lets us right into the application. So we've essentially published sort of, you know, kind of the holy grail, HTTP over HTTP, if you will, giving us that access to those applications on the back end. Now, that's just, you know, kind of an interesting term to use for it. That is not, you know, a real industry standard sort of way of talking about it. So think about it as this single sign-on metaphor, but it's really a policy that lets us go through. So it lets us establish who we are. So from a credential standpoint, let's just say, okay, I'm Keith Combs, I'm a Microsoft employee, I have a certificate associated with that as a user ID, and my machine also has a certificate, so it's got a machine cert associated with it as well. So we can use those various credentials to allow access into the back-end systems, right? So that user access is real cool. We really love those new capabilities. So let's see how we do some of this. So we're going to look at some of the certificate integration and how we can kind of take advantage of that with IIS and Exchange, and then we'll look at, how you would publish Outlook Web Access or maybe information to smartphones and pocket PC style devices that you might have out there. So let's get to the sharing capabilities again. Let me share this out. Takes us right back over to our the last VM that we're running. Now, in this particular case, let's go jump back over to our Exchange server. Just click on this, get it nice and selected, and we're going to go over to the Exchange server here. And let's bring up our websites and see what this looks like. So you'll notice I have minimized here the IIS sort of manager tool. And we can see all the different websites we have. Now, you'll notice that somebody has installed Exchange as this VM, right? And by default, if you don't change the names and if you install Outlook Web Access and those capabilities, it'll create some virtual directories here. So now below the default website, you see things like Exchange, EXWeb, EXAdmin, and we're gonna make some properties and settings, you know, style change to these. So the first one we're going to look at is let's take a look at the default website here. And we're going to go ahead and implement a certificate on it. So we're going to go to the properties for it. The first place we want to go, I'll let your screen catch up just a little bit, is we're going to go to directory security. You'll notice here down at the bottom of this little dialog box, we've got secure communications, right? You're probably familiar with this. We're going to click on the server certificate here, and it up comes this little wizard, and it's going to allow us to specify, you know, a certificate if one already exists. So we could create a new certificate if we wanted to, which would, you know, send a request over to the CA, the certificate authority, have it generate a new cert, you know, bring that back. And so we could go through that process. Now, we've already kind of shortcutted that a little bit. So we've got a certificate already designed. So we're going to assign an existing certificate. So your screen is now updating, and let's go and click Next. And you'll notice that up pops the certificate that I was talking about. So if we look at this certificate, you'll notice that it's got SEA-EXSP-01.contoso.com defined here. And you can see, you know, it's got an expiration date, you know, what purpose it's going to be intended for, secure authentication. So we can see some of that kind of information available to it right there. So let's click Next. You'll notice that the default SSL port is specified there, 443. So if you want to override that, you can. We're just going to leave that as our default here. And it kind of gives us this little summary screen so you can see, you know, a good example of all the information that we could have drilled into. And I'll click Next, and we'll click Finish there, right? So now that we have that, we can view that certificate if we want to here. So we can see the range of expiration here. So it was, you know, created earlier this year, and it's going to expire in a couple years. We can see details on it, certification path up to our CA. So we can get a variety of information there. But really, the next thing we want to do is we want to start looking at these virtual directories and start forcing SSL traffic on those virtual directories. So the first place we're going to do that is our Exchange directory. So I'm going to highlight that. So I'm going to click on it, and let's go to the properties for it. And we're going to do the same thing. We're going to go to the directory security tab. You'll notice that since we've already implemented that cert at the default level, we've got this sort of button grayed out here that we can't, you know, that the server certificate is, or I should say that dialog box is unavailable. So we can view the cert here if we want to, or we can edit and make changes. So in our case, let's go take a look at, you know, what is currently defined for secure communications. As you can see here, you know, the default settings are we're not going to force SSL, we're going to ignore client certs, et cetera. So this is not really what we want. So let's turn on certificate security And let's force, you know, strong encryption, 128-bit encryption here. So you can see we're going to make that change. And then let's see, what else do we want to do this? This should be good. Let's click OK. Save those changes. Click OK again to save those changes. Then the next place that we want to start setting things up is we want to do the same thing for the public directory that's down here. Actually, let's do EXWeb as well. So properties, do the same thing. Save those changes. So that probably went pretty fast on your screen. Then we're going to do the same thing down here for secure communications on the public area as well. Directory security, turn on SSL. So we can see that we're just essentially turning that on for the three sort of main directories that we're going to use for Outlook web access and communications in and out of our server. So I'm going to click OK and save those changes. And let's see, what else do we need to do? So we're pretty much done as far as IIS is concerned. Now the next thing we need to do is go to find some firewall policies. So let's jump back over to our Exchange server. I just minimize this so you can see where we're going from and to. And now we want to go to the firewall policy container up here, and we're going to set up some capabilities that are going to be needed. So one of the things we need to do is set up what's known as a web listener. You may have seen this in demos with ISA Server 2004. Web listeners look at traffic coming in and out of networks on particular ports and then redirect that traffic to a particular machine or network, right? So we're going to do that now. We're going to create a new web listener. Now you'll notice we don't have any defined here. So that container is empty. So I'm going to do the drop-down list here. And you can see here we've got web listener as one of the objects that we can define under the network objects area here in the toolbox. So let's call this, what do we want to call this? Let's call this external web. And we'll put 443 to indicate port 443, right? And you can define what kind of connections we're going to have here. Now, by default, we're going to require SSL with the clients. And so in this particular case, that's fine. So we're going to leave, you know, we're going to force SSL on those client connections. And then we define who we're going to listen to. Now, in this particular case, we're going to listen to traffic coming in from the outside. So in other words, traffic coming in from the Internet trying to hit this ISA server as a front end, if you will, to, you know, internal resources. In this particular case, our internal resources that we're going to use are going to be Exchange. But it could be something like an internal SharePoint site or maybe a line of business application that you've got running inside or on a perimeter network or something like that. But this will be sufficient for, you know, what we're going to do here. So I'm going to click Next. You'll notice that it's asking us at this point for the certificate that we want to use for that traffic, right? So we're telling it to force SSL, and we're going to use a certificate. Now, I'm going to go ahead and specify that. So I'm going to click the Select Certificate dialog box here. And you can see here that we've got mail.contoso.com defined, right? So that is what the external mail server actual public name is for the client. So when they go to connect to like Outlook Web Access or when they specify their mail server in an RPC over HTTP protocol configuration, then that's what they need to specify so that they have a match with the certificate. Now, let me go ahead and select that. And you'll notice that's filled out here in the top. Now, one of the things that's actually not in the demo script here, and it's not really specified anywhere in the slides, is this other sort of set of properties that are just below it. Now, you'll notice that you can assign a certificate for each IP address. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, one of the reasons you might want to do that, let's say you're hosting multiple domains. Now you can create multiple rules and use multiple certificates to, you know, allow incoming connections to hit those. So in my case, I'm actually hosting 5 different domains. So I've got several domains for myself, and I've got a couple for my wife for her business. So I could define certificates for those various different domains, and I could set up different business rules or different ISA rules, if you will, based on those different IP addresses and domain names. So this is new stuff that's not specified anywhere in the slides that I just wanted to kind of draw your attention to right here. And I think this is really cool. So for those of you that are going to host multiple domains, maybe you've got a friend's domain, or maybe you're in the business of doing that, this is a great new capability that allows you to secure, you know, very specific traffic and apply those policies against that traffic. So this is cool stuff. In this particular case, we're just going to click Next, since we're going to do this single rule, single cert, and that'll be sufficient for our demo. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to get to this authentication setting area. And you can see here, by default, it's going to be, you know, HTTP authentication. In our case, we want to set up form-based authentication. So we're going to use HTML form authentication. Now, you're probably used to seeing that, you know, when you go in maybe to a conference seminar, and maybe you use a kiosk or something like that to check your mail and, you know, go hit the OWA access area on your company's web, you'll recall you probably have to plug in your name and password and stuff like that on a form. And that's what's going to drive that. Is if we turn on form-based authentication here, that's what's going to drive that. And you'll notice here we have a number of different authentication methods. So depending on kind of what your back end looks like, we could specify maybe RADIUS or RSA Secure ID. So we have different ways to validate those client credentials. In our particular case, we're going to just leave it set to the default. So we're going to use Active Directory, we're going to use the default settings, and then we're going to go specify some single sign-on capabilities here in just a minute. So we're going to tell it now, you know, who is the single sign-on domain for that authentication to take place against. So we're going to specify contoso.com. So this is new. You probably haven't seen this before. This was not in the web listener for 2004. So this, we're starting to integrate, like I mentioned before, you know, authentication into Outlook Web Access or other services that you might be providing from ISA Server 2006. So this is a cool new little feature as well. So click Next, then we'll click Finish, and then we'll apply that change. Now, if you'll notice over here on the bottom sort of right-hand corner of your screen here, you'll see this little web listener. So I've got that, you know, highlighted over there now, external web 443, right? So all those little properties and settings are kind of built into that. Now we need to go take advantage of that. So how do we do that? Well, let's go through one of the publishing wizards. So we're going to publish. Let's click the task tab here, and we're going to go up here, and you'll notice here at the top, the sort of top wizard is the Exchange web client access sort of rule set. So I'm going to click that, and that's going to bring up our little wizard, and we're going to fill out a name here. So we're going to call this, what do we want to call this? Publish Exchange. Oops, be helpful if I could type right. Exchange, and this one we'll call it OWA, so Outlook Web Access. Now we could combine multiple capabilities, and you'll see that here in just a second. So you'll notice here the Exchange version, we can specify which Exchange version, and you'll also notice that we're starting to build in the Exchange Server 2007 intelligence into this product. Now, this will probably get updated later. So as we ship Exchange Server 2007, you know, if there need to be any updates made to ISA Server 2006, then we'll certainly, you know, ship those updates as well. But for now, we've already got some good capabilities built into it. So we've already got some of that built into it. And let's see. So 2003 in this particular case is what we're using. And you can see here for the client services, we have by default turned on Outlook Web Access. Now, we could also turn on RPC over HTTP, maybe if we wanted to do Exchange Active Sync for smartphones and other PDA-style devices, we could turn those on as well. So you can see we can turn all those kind of capabilities on right there. So let's click Next. So we've got the services, and now we can. You'll notice we've got some interesting new capabilities here, right? So you'll notice we're hitting the publishing type. And we can publish from a farm now, or some load balancing capabilities that weren't there in Exchange Server, not Exchange Server, but ISA Server 2004. So you see a little bit of a change here. We can publish a single website, which is what I'm doing. We're not really using load balancing capabilities, but you can see here if we had maybe network load balancing or something implemented like that, it would be smart enough to pick up and use DNS and to implement those kind of changes for these connections. So we got some cool capabilities built into that. We're going to leave this on the default setting. Then the next thing we can do is define how do we want that server-to-server connection to be handled. Now, in this particular case, this is the connection between the ISA server and the Exchange server. So would we want to encrypt that traffic or not? And in this particular case, we're going to tell it to go ahead and encrypt using SSL to connect to that backend server. So we're going to make sure that the traffic is secure from the client to ISA server and from ISA server to the backend Exchange servers. So that's, I think, a very interesting way to think about that. Make sure you're thinking about that as you're building your planning. And so now we need to tell, okay, well, what is the internal website that we're going to go hit? So which one do we need to establish that connection with? So we're going to tell it now EXSP-01, and we'll fill out the fully qualified domain name here. Okay, contoso.com. And then we're going to decide, okay, who are we going to accept requests from? And in this particular case, we're going to look at the public name. Now, who remembers what the public name was that we had a minute ago? Is it the server name, or is it the name that's on the certificate? Ah, remember that certificate name. So the certificate name is mail.contoso.com. And you'll need to make sure you get this right, because if you don't, what happens is you've got a certificate mismatch. The client comes in, tries to connect to that, and all of a sudden the name does not match the certificate. And what happens? Well, the user gets prompted and says, hey, there's a mismatch on this cert. Is this okay? Should I continue? So the integration isn't real sweet when you do that. So just make sure you have all these names correct so you have a nice, sort of integrated experience. Now, it's asking us for the next thing. What do you think we specify here? Well, we need to tell it which web listener. So we need to listen to external requests. As you'll recall, we're forcing SSL, and we built that SSL listener to do that with, right? So you can see that little listener. If we wanted to create a new one, we could right here, so we could click New and build a new listener. We'll cancel out of that. If we needed to tweak any of the settings for this listener, we could click the Edit button, and we could go into the properties and settings for things like the certificate, connections, those types of things. So, again, properties and settings are all at your fingertips here. So if maybe you forgot to do something and you wanted to make a change to that, you could do that. Let's go to Next. Authentication delegation. In this particular case, we can decide, what kind of authentication we want to use. Basic is fine for our needs right here, so we're just going to use basic auth. So we'll just take the default settings there, click Next. And then we can decide who we want to apply this to. So what users are going to be allowed to essentially use this traffic? Do we want to lock it into a subset of all users on our network, or are we just going to use all authenticated users? So in our case, we'll leave it the default here, all authenticated users. Next, click Finish, and we'll go ahead and apply those changes. We'll save those changes. Okay, so now that we've done that, we've saved that change. Your screen should update. Now it's all updated. Let's go simulate that, or let's go see if that's actually working. So we're going to go to this external web client. Now this client, if we look at the IP address for this client is sitting out on the subnet that's defined for the external network card. So this IP address, this particular virtual machine is using the external network name, or external subnet that we would use for the internet. So it's coming in as an outside request. And what we want to do here is let's go hit our Exchange web access. So I'm going to specify HTTPS, so SSL, and we're going to tell it what was the name that we need to go to, mail.contoso. And we need to tell it Exchange. So that's the little virtual directory, very common name. We hit Enter. Revocation. Looks like we got a revocation list there. Do you want to proceed? I must have made a mistake on one of the typos or something for the cert a minute ago. You'll notice a new little interface. So who's providing the web access at this point? So you can see ISA Server 2006 has got this form-based authentication. It's providing that web access, right? So let's see if we can get further. So we're going to tell it, let's see if we can log in as one of our test users here. We're going to tell it Aaron Kahn, and let's see if we get his password to work here. Log on. Now, the first time I did this in a test run, I did hit a little application error for the virtual, for the protocol. Yeah, I hit that same little error. So let's just do a refresh if we can get it to work here. There we go. Get it to wake up a little bit. So now we're logged in through the magic of form-based authentication into Aaron's mailbox. So let's just click New. We'll do a quick test to see that, you know, mail connectivity is working. So we'll just send a message to ourselves. Test one. Hit the send button. And then we'll do a quick send and receive. There we go. So now we can see mail is flowing in and out of that, right? So what we've done, so what did that just show? That showed us that we could connect from an external network. We went and hit the Outlook web access area, and we were able to connect to that VM very, very easily, right? And how many mouse clicks was that? You know, we went in and, as you'll recall, went in through the publishing wizard. We set up the web listener. We went through and published the Exchange server. We just kind of verified some of the SSL settings on IIS. So it was really a pretty easy process. Took us, you know, it would have taken me like all of 5 minutes if I wasn't sitting here talking on a webcast, right? So it was very, very easy way for us to do that. Now, also consider this, you know, we've got that built in and kind of set up really easily for Exchange Server and some of our other products like SharePoint, but you can do essentially the same thing for other applications, right? So let's say you build a custom networked app that's using UDP or TCP protocols to communicate on your network, and you need to publish that to a select group of individuals. Maybe it's a sales prospects application, or maybe it's something like that that you need to secure. You can see, you know, the natural steps that you would go through, right? You would set up a cert. Maybe you would define a specific group in Active Directory for a specific group of users. You could go through the same sort of publishing process, specify, you know, where that application is running in your network, specify the group of users that are allowed to connect to it, specify the certificate that they're going to use, specify how that SSL bridging is going to work. Is it going to, you know, force SSL from the client to ISA server, and then also force SSL from ISA server to the back-end line of business application? So you can see that this is not just Exchange Server. This is, you know, literally any other application that you want to set up and design around that. So I just wanted to make sure that you're aware of that. You know, it's really trivial to do things like Outlook Web Access, but it's also pretty trivial to do that for other things that you might do that are related to running the business that you're in. So keep that in mind as you start using, you know, this infrastructure, this set of plumbing that I'm showing you today. So let's talk about branch office protection and some of the other capabilities that we've got there. We've got a great new set of features there. So we've got new connectivity wizards. We've improved the way we propagate enterprise policies down to other ISA servers you might have in your infrastructure. So let's say you've got a group of machines that are in your infrastructure. And with that group of machines, you've got a bunch of, let's say you've got an array of ISA servers in the home office location. And in that array, you're setting certain policies and doing certain things there, right? And you might have a number of different branch office locations out there that you want to do similar policy application to. So you're going to, you know, set up the policies on the central location, and then push those policies out to other ISA servers that are on your network. So we've improved the way we, you know, distribute or propagate those policies out to branch office locations. So I think we're doing a much better job of that now with this product. And then you'll also see here that we've got secure remote management, so we've got the ability to make sure that the traffic in and out of those consoles that you might be using is secure. And you'll also notice, like I mentioned before, when we kind of looked at the templates, as we had in ISA Server 2004 and is now certainly applicable to ISA Server 2006, we can do this for multiple networks. So it's not just that connection to the internet. It could be, let's say you wanted to design some of the same style policies that I'm talking about inside your corporate infrastructure. Maybe you've got a group of users inside your corporate network that are only allowed to connect to a specific application or server inside your corporate network. You can force policy inside your network with ISA server as well. So it does a great job of allowing you to control all the traffic inside. Now, if you've got a large array, if you've got a lot of traffic going on, you might want to think about caching. And we do caching a variety of different ways. So traditionally, the caching that people talk about is, you know, caching of web hits. So as people are hitting, you know, a well-known site like, you know, Microsoft.com or ESPN or CNN or, you know, one of those well-known websites, you're probably already caching, you know, hits for that, right? But also think about caching things like, you know, updates that might be coming from our Windows Server Update services. So you might want to cache some of that information so that people are, you know, using up additional bandwidth on that internet connection that doesn't need to, right? So we can cache that information. And more than likely, if you're getting, you know, those kind of hits, you're probably going to go ahead and use, you know, a WSS server or something like that inside your network anyway. So that would be, you know, obvious sort of natural progression as your network grows. So we've got good capabilities there. Now, you'll notice that we've got this little acronym, called BITS. And what is BITS? BITS is a background transfer service that's really quite cool. So it lets you essentially stream data and transfer data without sucking up all of the resources on your machine. So it's this little background service, lets you, you know, get some of that data and still allow applications that you might be running either at the client level or at the server level to continue to do their thing, right, without sucking up all the utilization of your box. So BITS is a nice new service. It's been around for a while. You see some applications take advantage of it and others don't, but it's a great service for things like, you know, ISA server that's going to do caching, making sure we're taking advantage of, you know, all the latest and greatest technologies that we have for the network. So update caching, I mentioned that a minute ago. What benefits are there? Well, these are some pretty good benefits. You know, reducing your days of risk. So making sure that we can get a service pack and fix into your network and get that and make that immediately available to your clients. Now, you know, days of risk probably depends a lot on your change management and promotion process, whether you're going to test that in a lab and those kind of things, right? So a lot of you are probably doing testing, and you'll probably, you know, take something from Microsoft, test it in the lab, make sure it doesn't break your consistent office environment, and then also make sure that you know, that you have some assurance that it's not going to take down a particular line of business application or something like that. So these benefits may or may not be applicable depending on how you're set up and running, but you do get some great benefits, you know, in terms of how it caches web traffic, how it works with your existing platform, and, you know, whether you're going to let those updates flow on through. So those are good to think about. So let's talk about branch office gateways and impact there. Now we can start to look at how do we compress traffic. So we've got new capabilities for HTML, and we can start specifying from a policy perspective, how do we look at the traffic that's coming in, how do we differentiate that traffic and use like diffserv IP settings to control quality of service, if you will, on the network, or control quality of service, if you will, maybe on a specific application that's running on our web farm. And so we'll see how do we specify that here in just a minute. And then some other things that we've already talked about is caching. And if you're running, you know, a really big environment, maybe you'll have a distributed array of hierarchical based caching. So let's go down and start looking at our next set of demos. And we're going to look at how do we kind of set up and run web compression as well as caching. And then we'll look at, you know, the diffserv capabilities that are here. So let me get things shared out for you again here. Okay, so let's see, I've got my little web administrator there. I was just kind of restarting some VMs while I was talking just a moment ago. And the first place we're going to go, let's go take a look at our ISA server once again, as you might suspect. And we're going to go to the global settings that are here for our global HTTP policy settings. And we get there by coming down to the general container. And you'll notice here this kind of middle area here, we've got global web policy settings. And you'll notice down below that we've got define HTTP compression preferences. So we'll click that. And then you can see here by default we've got compression turned on. And then we can decide on, you know, where we're going to do, how we're going to handle compressed data and where it's coming from. So by compressed data, return compressed data, whether it's coming from us or whether it's being requested by clients that are out there. So we've got two different tabs here and two different sets of settings. Now let's do this. Let's go on the return compressed data area. We're going to go ahead and add a network entity here. So we're going to add one of the networks that we've got. So I'm going to specify the internal network, add. So we'll say close. You'll notice down here that we've got compressible content types, and you'll see a couple defaults, HTML documents, text documents. If we wanted to add additional documents, we could do that. So let's say we wanted to turn on, let's say, documents maybe and macro documents. So we could turn on a couple different document types and you know, essentially add other approved sort of capabilities there. So click OK and save that. And let's see, let's take a look at the request compressed data area. And in this particular case, these are requests coming in from the outside. So let's do an add there. And then we're going to add the external network to an add close. And let's see, what else do we want to do? So that should be good. So let's go ahead and click OK. And then we'll save those changes, apply those changes. So now we're allowing configuration. So now we applied a policy that's now, you know, using HTTP compression both from the inside as well as the outside. So we're applying a policy, if you will, to the traffic that's flowing. And if the client supports compression, then we can do some sophisticated compression between both our web server and ISA server and those clients that are requesting that sort of information that's out there. Now, if we're getting those kind of hits, we might decide that we want to configure cache, right? So the next thing I wanted to kind of show you is you know, how do we configure properties and settings around cache? So let's go to the configuration container here. You'll notice that we've got a nice, pretty sort of summary slide here, and you'll notice that we've got configure cache properties here underneath that. Now we can get to this a couple different ways, right? So you can see here we've got the cache node, and so we can obviously go into properties and settings on that. But I just want to kind of show you the different variety of different ways that we can get to these, you know, definitions, if you will. So I'm going to click configure cache properties, and that takes us to the cache rules area. And let's go ahead and look at our cache drives first. So we can see in my particular case, I'm running a VM. It's only got one virtual hard drive. So it's not like we have, you know, this sophisticated storage area network or SCSI array or whatever sitting here. But let's say we did. We had a bunch of drives. We can configure, you know, how much cache we're going to allow across those drives. Now, let's go ahead and define some properties for this. So I'm going to click the define property settings on this. We can see that cache drive. Then I'm going to set a maximum cache size here, so we'll just give it, you know, we'll just go ahead and specify 1,000 there, and we'll go ahead and set that information, and then we'll go ahead and apply that, say OK. Next thing I want to do is let's go up to the cache rules here. You'll notice that we've got a rule sitting here for Microsoft updates. So let's take a look at, you know, what we're doing in terms of caching information that's coming down off, you know, the update .microsoft.com servers. And you'll notice when we come in here to look at this, let's take a look at what I wanted to show you was some of the cache store and retrieval sort of properties. So you can see those here, how we're going to handle that. And really, what I wanted to show you was, let's go to the to area and let's take a look at the update domain set. So when we go to edit here, you can see all the different domains, and we've got some, you know, sort of global specified here for things like download.windowsupdate.com, update.microsoft.com, so the variety of places you might receive updates from. Let's see if it's got Office in here. Let's scroll down. So I don't see Office, but we're starting to move all of our products into the Windows Update space anyway. So we don't. If you're using Office updates, you know, I think we're still getting some updates from the Office update servers. I'll have to go double check that, but you can see here we've got most, you know, vast majority of the update servers already specified in this default configuration set. So that's cool. It kind of saves you some time and trouble there. Let's go look at some of the other properties in here. So let's save this. Let's take a look at the web caching that's there. So we can see, okay, we're going to do web caching, HTTP caching. We can see, you know, we're going to defining, you know, how long these objects are going to live. So how long are they going to remain? What do those boundaries look like? And so we can see. We can specify that. We can also do the same kind of thing for FTP properties, so we can define, you know, the lifetime, if you will, for those different objects that might be coming from FTP servers. on the advanced tab, you'll notice that we've got advanced settings and whether or not we want to cache SSL responses or maybe want to block specific attachments or objects, I should say, that are real large. So maybe we want to say, okay, anything over a meg, we're going to go ahead and block that, something along those lines. So there's a lot of different things that we can do with the cache update rules. Let's take a look at content download jobs. We don't have any specified in this particular case, but if we wanted to, you know, specify specific, you know, sort of automation, if you will, for grabbing web content and prefetching that, we can, you know, create a content download job, specify the schedule for that, and to bring that in and apply that to our cache. So maybe we've got something like, for instance, a partner catalog or something like that, and we know that we've got a bunch of clerical help or some knowledge workers that are going to come in, or maybe they use a specific line of business application. We could go prefetch all that information, you know, first thing in the morning before their shift starts, get that all up in cache, so when they start banging away on it from data input terminals, or maybe they're taking orders on the phone or something like that, we can make sure that that response time for their applications are nice and lively, and we could do that through these content download jobs, right? So this is a great little way to think about, you know, how can I take this architecture and apply this to, you know, the business setting that we have. So think about that. I mean, we've got good plumbing here. Let me go ahead and save these changes. You'll notice in this particular case with these cache rules, it's saying, okay, I need to save these changes and restart the services. Do you want me to do that now, or do you want me to do that later? So we'll tell it to go ahead and do that now. We'll let it go ahead and, you know, do its thing there. And it only takes a second here, so it's going to restart the server service, the ISA server service, here in just a moment. And then the next thing I want to do is I want to start showing you some of the web filters. And really, the fun stuff that I want to get into is looking at the policies associated with DiffServ preferences and how do we specify some of those quality of service capabilities that I mentioned a little while ago. So let's take a look at add-ins. So I mentioned add-ins. We've got web filters. And these are, you know, good ways to look at behavior that you might want to define for a particular set of services. So we've got some set up here for things like SMTP, or we've got things set up for something like FTP. So maybe you want to force, for instance, maybe you want to force, you know, passive FTP transfers or something like that. So you can specify those kind of capabilities with these various application and web filters. Now, in our case, what we want to look at is we want to look at the DiffServ filter here in just a minute. So let's go back up to the general area. So we'll come back to this in a minute. I want to show you another way to get to these. You'll notice that we see global HTTP policy settings in here, right? So we can see that. And you'll notice that we see this little flag that's down here, the little checkered flag, which is kind of cool, that says specify DiffServ preferences. So let's click that. And that brings the little property dialog box for turning on this capability. And so that's kind of the segue, right? The first thing we want to do is we want to define, you know, who's going to get the priority. So how are we going to specify that? So the first thing we're going to do is define what those priorities look like. So I'm going to build a couple of different profiles. I'm going to build one called high priority. So we'll do that, and then we're going to specify the DiffServ bits. So in this particular case, this is sort of the binary representation of that. And if we wanted to specify size limits, we could in this particular case. So we'll go ahead and specify 700 bytes there. Okay? So let's do that. Let's click OK. We'll save that. And then next thing we're going to do is we're going to add a medium priority. Okay? And then we're going to set a different bit mask for that. In this case, it's 110, 110. Say OK. And we're not going to specify a size on that, so we click OK. So now you can see we've got a couple different priorities and values that we can specify here. The very next thing that we want to do is we want to start defining some of the URLs that are going to take advantage of this. So let's do that next. We're going to click a URL. So let's define a line of business application that we've got sitting out there. So let me paint this scenario for you. Let's say we've got a sales application or a catalog or something like that that people are going to use. And we want to specify, particular priority for that. So let's go ahead and plug that in now. So let's call this one Fabricam, our friend, Fabricam.com. Oops, a little typo there. And let's call this sales. So we're going to hit the sales virtual directory, and we'll put a little star to global that. And then you'll notice here the priority drop-down list. So what do you think we're going to see when we click that? We're going to see the little drop-down list that we created just a minute ago, and I see some little paint issues on your screen, but we're going to select, in this particular case, that we want to give our sales application high priority. So we're going to select that priority profile for it. Click OK. Now you can see that. And then the next thing we're going to do is we're going to specify priorities for everything else. So let's do this. Let's do something similar. So in this case, it's going to be www.fabricam.com/*. So we'll essentially make everything else medium priority, right? So we're giving priority to the sales application, and we're specifying, again, some properties and settings, a profile, if you will, for the rest of the website. So we can see that. Now we can also do some interesting stuff. So we can do some tagging, if you will, even for domains. So if we wanted just to do something natural for the entire domain, we can do that as well. So let's do all machines on, let's see, we've been working with Fabricam. I started to put in Contoso there. So Fabricam. There we go. I probably had some typos a minute ago. But anyway, so star.fabricam.com. So any host in that domain, we're going to give it medium priority. So we might decide to create, you know, something even more specific, like low priority or whatever, but you can start to see some of the design around this. Now, the last thing here is specifying the networks to apply these settings against. So we could specify this even on internal perimeter networks, but in this case, all of our connection requests are coming in from the external website or the external internet, so we'll go ahead and specify, okay, we want you to essentially look at the external requests and start tagging those protocol requests as they come in from external. So we'll click OK, and we'll apply that change. Click OK, and save that. And the next thing that we'd want to do is let's take a look at our rules here. And you know, actually what I wanted to look at was just wanted to kind of look at some of the changes that it implemented here, some of the network sets. Wanted to look at the properties for external here. Yep, that's good. Okay, so let me cancel out of sharing on this real quick. Just kind of recap what we did there. So I showed you a couple different things, right? We showed how to turn on web compression. There's a variety of different ways to do that, so you can control that. We also showed you how to, you know, take a look at caching and make some decisions there. So if you have a nice caching array or, you know, a hierarchical set of caching, you can control policies and settings against that. And then the last thing we saw there is, you know, how do we go through and build, you know, the diff serve policies and define policies against maybe virtual directories, line of business applications, et cetera. So there's a lot of good ways to do that. So what do we want to do next? Next thing I want to kind of show you is some other security capabilities that are there. So let's take a look at the firewall and sort of other security capabilities that are there. You know, obviously we have a bunch of different firewalls that are out there. This is a really great firewall-based product, and so we've continued to improve that. It's an excellent firewall for blocking, you know, the bad guys from getting into our network, blocking applications from sending attachments in our network to customers or receiving attachments coming in. So, you know, that's the goal here is we want to make sure we're providing real good protection to our internal network and keeping the bad guys out, right? So ISA server is going to do a good job of that for us and making sure that it's checking, you know, what policies that we have that have been set up by us and blocking any of the applications that are out there. And we can set these policies. You'll notice this little clock here. One of the things we can do is we can apply certain policies during different times of the day. So maybe We won't block all network traffic when we know everybody's out of the office. So we can essentially deny all traffic, you know, from such and such time to such and such time, and then automatically turn everything back on in the morning, you know, before everybody gets there. Now, be careful with that because, you know, you never know if you've got your early birds or people that are working, you know, all night. But the cool thing there is that we've got, you know, great sort of flexibility in the way we define policies, you know, who they apply against, what network resources we're going to apply that against, and at what time frames they're valid. So keep all that criteria in mind. They're just great ways to do that. So let's talk about flood resiliency. And what we mean by that is you'll recall over the past few years, people have been hit by all types of denial of service attacks and, you know, worms that are flooding traffic on their network, right? So we've added great new capabilities of, you know, throttling what's taking place and making sure that, you know, all of our resources on our box aren't concerned. So making sure that, you know, some rogue process doesn't start generating a huge amount of logs or doesn't start consuming all of the memory on our box or, you know, doing some weird stuff with DNS. So we can control a lot of those properties and settings quite easily inside ISA server. So let's go see how we do that. So how do we throttle some of those different settings on our box? Let me share this out. This will be a real quickie here. So let's see here. We're inside the ISA server console, and what I want to do is show you some of the flood mitigation capabilities. So let's go to where do I want to go here? Let's see, general. There we go. So under the general area, you'll notice we've got a new wizard down here called Configure Flood Mitigation Settings. So let me click that, and up comes this little dialog box. I'll move it over so you can see a little bit better. You can see here we can decide how we want to handle connection requests. We can decide how we want to handle concurrent TCP connections. We want to decide how we handle, you know, maximum concurrent UDP sessions. So we can tweak and tune a lot of those properties and settings here. So if we wanted to, you know, change the thresholds, if you will, limits for those mitigation settings, we can go right in here, make those properties and setting changes, and you know, turn this on in just a heartbeat. Now you'll also notice that we can make exceptions for specific machines if we want to. So maybe we've got a remote customer machine that needs to generate a lot of traffic. So maybe it's sending and receiving a lot of data, or it's got a line of business application. We can define exactly what those computers are, and we can go define those computer sets inside this sort of metaphor here. So up pops the computer set rule element. We can define, you know, the name for those computers, maybe the default range for their addresses. Maybe they're using multiple ranges. So we can go define those properties and settings for those exceptions inside the flood mitigation area. So we can, you know, set some default thresholds, and then if we have a customer or application that we need to kind of override that with, we'll and make an exception, then we have the ability to do that. So again, these are down here in the general area, down here at the bottom under additional security policies. You can see here this little flood mitigation rule that's down here kind of in the bottom right. So let's go back to slides and talk really quickly about reporting and alerting, and then we'll come back and take a look at MOM here in just a minute. So as you might suspect, there's good monitoring and reporting in the product by default, but then we've also got a management pack and tight integration with the Microsoft Operations Manager. So with Microsoft Operations Manager, you're probably familiar with, you know, various management packs for things like Exchange or, you know, other infrastructure servers you might run. And ISA Server is no exception to that. So we've got a management pack for it that allows us to look at, you know, health indicators, allows us to look at, you know, the built-in sort of knowledge around that to determine, okay, well, if our ISA Server is outside, you know, the normal thresholds, you know, the normal sort of problems that we might see. So let's say, for instance, memory consumption is high or disk utilization is high in the caching array or something like that, it'll tell us, it'll alert us and tell us, you know, the administrator that that's going on. Now, how does MOM do that? Well, MOM's got a bunch of different rules that it's set up to run with. So let's go see what those rules look like and how do we kind of deploy agents to our server and make sure that we can actually get that kind of information over to the MOM console. So let me share out my desktop here. And the first place I want to go is show you some of the firewall policies. We're going to create a quick firewall policy. So we're going to create a new access rule. And let's call this allow mom agent. Do that. And this is going to be an allow rule, so we're going to turn that on. And let's see, what do we want to do? We need to go specify the protocol. So we want to go to the All Protocols area. Well, I guess in this case, we'll just go ahead and do All Protocols. Actually, no, I don't want to do that. Selected protocols, and I want to specify the MOM protocols, and it's under the All Protocols area. That's what it is. So you'll notice, before I get down here, you'll notice that I went into the sort of this little network picker, or an object picker, whatever you want to call it. You'll notice in a variety of places we're able to pick, you know, network objects and protocol objects. And down below this container called All Protocols, we've got a bunch of different things already predefined here. So we can see DNS servers, DHCP servers, you know, web servers. You'll notice we've got a variety of different authentication servers in here. We've got IPsec defined, Kerberos. We've got a bunch of protocols defined. And the one we're looking for here is the Microsoft Operations Manager Agent protocol. So you can see that here. So we'll do an add and close and specify that protocol. So we're going to use that. Let's see. Okay, well, made a mistake. Timeout. So sources, and from this source, in this particular case, it's going to be the machine that we're running. So for the networks, it's going to be this local host. So we're only going to allow traffic from this machine, or I should say this IC server VM, to the destination. So we're specifying only from the local host to our destination. In this particular case, the destination that we want isn't defined, so we're going to define that. So let's expand computers. Now, you'll notice we had the Exchange server defined, but we don't have our MOM server defined. So let's go do that now. So this time we'll call this SEA-MOM-01. We'll give it a nice IP address. And let's see, what is this supposed to be? 16.3. Do that. Okay, so now we can pick that from the list. We can see that in the pick list. Add. Do a little close there. So now that's the destination. We're only allowing specific protocol from a specific machine to a specific machine. We can decide, you know, whether we're going to allow all users, user sets. You know, that's fine. So we're going to do all users, and then we'll click Finish and apply that. Okay, so now that we've done that, we can start to look at, you know, some of the properties and settings associated with MOM. So let's jump over to our MOM machine here real quick. Now, I started up a MOM VM a little while ago. So let me get logged on to it. And we're going to start up the Microsoft Operations Manager Administrator Console. So you can see that down here. So we're going to launch it. And one of the things we want to do is we want to allow agent installations to occur. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the global settings here. Administration, global settings. So I'm going to show you how we get to that hierarchy there. And now we get this little list of all the different global settings that are there, right? And I'm going to, the thing that I want to change is I want to change this management server that we're actually playing with right now. So I'm going to go to properties for it. And we're going to go to the agent install tab. And we're going to allow manual agent installations to occur. So we're going to turn off the rejection sort of checkbox there. Okay, save that change. And then now we need to tell that to commit. So I'm going to right mouse click the management node here and tell it to commit the configuration change. Say OK. So now that's committing that change to the MOM servers and any other agents that are out there. So they're, when they go to query for changes, they'll pick up that change. So the next thing that I want to do in this particular case is I want to just go ahead and restart the service for MOM here. So I'm going to minimize this down for a second. And we'll go to the services listing. So we'll go to the standard services that are here, and we'll scroll down to the MOM service, and we're going to restart the MOM service. It'll take a second to do that. It's pretty quick on this particular VM. Okay, so that's done. So now we're going to jump back over to our ISA server. And let's just minimize this. And you'll notice that we have an agent installation subdirectory here on the desktop for ISA server. And we're going to go ahead and kick off and run the MOM agent installation on this particular box. So you'll notice it comes up and says unknown publisher. It kind of gives us that little nastygram. We're going to tell it to run. We'll get a little setup wizard here in a second. Say next. You'll notice it's got the MOM Manager 2005 agent set up. We'll click next. And it's asking us for some group names and management servers. So we're going to tell this that it's Contoso, and the management server is SEA-MOM-01. Okay. Click next. You'll notice that the agent action is telling us, okay, well, how do you want to, you know, who do you want to, what account do you want to use? In this case, we're going to use the local system account. If you're in a domain-based environment, you may have like a service account already set up, and you may want to run with that. So we'll leave it local system account. And then the next thing we're going to do is, you know, it's going to ask us here, do you want to use Active Directory, and is this a trusted domain? Say, yep. We're going to go ahead and do that. And then we can see, get this little installation sort of summary screen. We'll go ahead and click next and let that go ahead and install. So what we're doing is we're installing the agent on ISA server so that this agent can talk to the back-end MOM infrastructure and can alert our management infrastructure about things that are occurring on it, right? And so what we'll see here in just a minute, you know, how would we monitor that? So what kind of tools would we use to monitor that? So we're going to jump back over to the MOM server. Let's go back over to our MOM server. Minimize this. And let's bring up the operator console. So let's say you're the operator for MOM. And, you know, what kind of tool would you use? And this would be a normal tool, so the operator console. And that's going to show us, you know, alerts and things that are taking place in our environment, right? Now, we haven't received the update yet from the ISA server. Sometimes that can take a few minutes before it comes back in and populates, you know, our console and starts looking at that. So you can kind of see that. And it may take as long as a couple minutes here. Let me just see if I can do a refresh here, get it to show up. Not yet. If our VM is going to cooperate. Computers and groups. Just kind of looking around in the console here. Come on, baby, you can do it. Okay, it doesn't look like it's going to cooperate. And I think we're getting close to out of time. So what I'm going to do is just kind of show you just a little bit of the information that's in here. So let's assume that the agent's come over and is now available inside our operation console here. So things that we could do. So we could select performance counters to draw and graph against. So we could pick and choose that ISA server and pick and choose performance counters with things like, you know, the cache array or connection limits. Or maybe we want to look at performance around one of those applications and see if our quality of service is really working. So the performance area will let us do that. So we can pick and choose those counters. And once we've picked and choose those counters, we can draw a graph. So it has great graphing capabilities built right into it. So I think you'll find that MOM, the integration with MOM and the management packs associated with ISA Server 2006 is very, very good. Now, I want to show you a couple things. You'll notice I'm highlighting on the bottom left of your screen right here is the ISA Server 2006 management pack update. So let me show you where that's at. So I went out to the mom area on Microsoft.com, and you'll notice in here we've got a downloads area. So I'm highlighting that now. And on the downloads area, we've got the management pack catalog, right? So you can click in the management pack catalog and put in a keyword, something like, you know, ISA and mom version. So that's mom 2005. And let's say you wanted to specify that, you know, Microsoft produced that. So let's click search. And up comes the search. And sure enough, you can see the new management pack that we just published a few weeks ago. Actually, it's been like 4 weeks now. So there's the management pack for ISA Server 2006. So I downloaded that and updated the VM that we just saw just a minute ago. So if we go look at that VM and we bring up the MOM admin console and look at management packs, if we look in the computer groups here, you can see here that we've got ISA Server rule sets defined in here. So we can see ISA Server 2006 or Enterprise Editions. And then if we start drilling down into the properties for that, we can see the knowledge base that's built inside that management pack for MOM 2006. I mean, excuse me, for ISA Server 2006. So let me show you a couple other things before I turn you loose here. So if you go to the ISA Server 2006 area, you'll notice that we've got a bunch of case studies and white papers. You can pull down ISA Server 2006 trial software. And in fact, for those of you that are TechNet subscribers, you can actually go grab the ISA Server 2006 Standard and Enterprise Editions from the download area of TechNet Plus Online. So if you're a TechNet Plus Online subscriber, you can go get ISA Server right now. You can go pull that down, download it, burn an ISO disk. Now, I haven't had a chance. I just got a shipment of TechNet DVDs, I think Saturday when I got home, and I haven't looked yet to see if that's in that sort of disk set. The other thing I'll show you really quickly is my blog. So this is blogs.technet.com/Keith Combs. So I know that Brian's probably been working pretty hard, you know, working through the Q&A queue, and I'll take a look at that here in just a minute to see if there's any questions that maybe he was unable to answer or maybe needs further clarification. So I wanted to show you my blog there, blogs.technet.com/Keith Combs. And if I find something that's really juicy, I'll be happy to go ahead and post this out to my blog and follow up with that after this webcast. So with that, I'm going to go back and get out of desktop sharing here real quick and kind of wrap this session up. Hopefully today we gave you a good look at the ISA Server 2006 product. There are both standard and enterprise editions. We looked mostly at sort of standard feature sets today, but we talked about, you know, the enterprise edition sort of differentiation there. There's a lot of good new security features. You saw, you know, the web compression capabilities that are there. So there's both security and performance, great new stuff in the 2006 version of ISA Server. And then you saw that we've got a bunch of tools, so management packs that are available, as well as, you know, tools that integrate within, you know, back-end management infrastructure like SMS and MOM. So hopefully you got a, you know, got a good peek at that. If you need additional Q&A, there's a good link to give us, you know, ideas on, you know, other webcasts you might be interested in doing. And with that, I'm going to turn it over just a minute to Janet while she kind of takes you to the evaluation slide. I'm going to take a look at the question and answer queue.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Keith. And I'll remind everybody, if you have any questions for Keith, go ahead and you can still submit those at that Ask button in the lower right-hand corner. And he'll get to those in just a moment. Also, want to point out we do record all these webcasts, so if you'd like to see any of our previously recorded webcasts, well, anything that's coming up, everything's posted right there at Microsoft.com/webcasts. I'd like to let you know today's webcast was presented using that Microsoft Office Live Meeting technology, and there is a free 14-day trial. Just go to Microsoft.com/presentlive, and you'll be able to get that. Now, as Keith mentioned, we do have a survey coming up. I just want to point out your feedback is very valuable, so if you could take a moment and fill out that survey before you log out, we do appreciate that. Looks like we might be having an error here with our survey, so I'll get that survey link posted up into that Q&A, and if you can get to that sometime today, that would be great to go back in and fill out that.
Bummer. That's the first time I've seen that happen in a while.
Well, we've been having some trouble with our worldwide events. It's been up and down, so it looks like it might be down at the moment. So I apologize for that, but we'll get that posted into that link there so that everyone can go in at some point and hopefully give you some feedback there. So,
well, then everybody get I'm sorry. It looks like everybody's going to get to go to happy hour early today. Is that what you're saying?
That's pretty much what I'm saying. I do want to remind everybody, though, that Keith has a great blog there, and that's blogs.technet.com/Keith Combs. There's lots of great information. So you can also check back there, too, and have lots of great information on that as well. So, Keith, anything you want to go over real quick at the other than that survey URL that I'll get posted there?
No, it looks like my friend and fellow colleague Brian Von Axelsen has been pounding away at answering a lot of the questions that are out there. So what I'm going to do is I will go out there and, you know, capture all the Q&A log stuff that's there and probably post any sort of juicy tidbits on my blog. And what I may also do is get the URL from you and post that on the blog entry as well, so that if somebody wants to fill out the evaluation, they can. We take that information, you know, very seriously, so that's a good way for you to give us feedback on how we did, you know, whether we did a good job, you know, giving you a good overview of the product. In this particular case, it wasn't really a serious deep dive, so this was just kind of a tech overview real quick on ISA 2006, but I will kind of go through the questions, kind of check those out, and see how well a job Brian did. Now, I know he's a real, real smart guy, so he probably, you know, knocked a home run out of the park, but I'll just kind of verify everything that's cool in there. And once again, thanks, Brian, for helping out, and once again, thanks to everybody else that came to the webcast. Sorry I went just a little bit over, but this is a fun session, a lot of good demos, so hopefully you got some value from it.
Great, and I've got that survey link posted down there in that Q&A window as well, so if you could just drop that down and go back and visit it sometime, we really would appreciate that feedback. So with that, I'm going to extend a special thanks to Keith for today's presentation. Thanks, Keith, for stepping in there for Chris Avis there at the last moment. Thanks, Brian, for helping out with the Q&A. And with that, that concludes today's TechNet Live meeting. So thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.